Can our shaky economy make it through 2020? Well, that depends on whether we can control the spread of COVID-19 cases, among other things, according to Paul Brubaker of TZ Economics. We've been checking in with him throughout this crisis. Here's where Brubaker thinks we're headed and what's at play.
Here in Hawaii, not so much on the neighbor islands, but particularly on Oahu, the late summer, it was midsummer. By late July, you had to know it was not good on Oahu, and a lockdown probably should have occurred at that point. But there was a little head fake where the numbers started to back off, and so I don't know this, but it's possible that decision makers thought twice or hesitated at reimposing lockdown. And then when they didn't, the numbers exponentiated, the daily case counts exponentiated in August. So that was a big setback because we went to 200, 225 cases per million person per day and made what we went through in March and April when we had an actual statewide lockdown look like nothing. I mean, March and April were nothing compared to what happened on Oahu in August. So to put this in perspective, Oahu in late August was worse than anywhere in Europe at the time. Worse than France, worse than Italy. And thankfully, the lockdown, once it was imposed, I think it's August 27th, unlocking and on September 24th, seems to have brought the case counts back to or just below 100 cases per million persons per day, which is the beginning of the city's tiered, data-driven categories for reopening various aspects of economic activity in a phased way based on the data as they evolve, case count, positivity in COVID testing. And then, of course, you know, people are watching other indicators like the transmission rate or the reproduction rate, which has remained below one. So each person who is infected is infecting less than one person at the moment. 0.9. You know, some people, obviously, healthcare and medical professionals are watching the ICU bed utilization rates, which are up around 60%, and for which the de facto cap is 80%. That is, we can't actually get to 100% in Hawaii because we don't have enough nurses and hospital personnel. So we run out of a room at 80%, and we went from 40 to 60% utilization in about a month. So that's, you know, that's kind of for the industry in terms of sort of managing the worst case scenarios for people who acquire the COVID-19 through exposure to the novel coronavirus. That's sort of the danger zone, and you got to stay away from there.
We're 2 weeks away from more tourists.
The question is, actually, there are two sides of the issue. One is, are you a safe enough destination for people actually to willingly travel to, which a case can be made for the neighbor islands in general, or certainly some of them, places like Kauai that haven't had much exposure, Lanai, even Maui. Big Island's had some trouble in various hotspots. Oahu, I think, has more to demonstrate in terms of the credibility of its mitigation response. So that's one side of the equation. And the other side is, are the people who are arriving posing a risk? And there, we know there is a problem because local people have been coming back from the mainland bringing the disease with them all summer long, like they had to go to Vegas or whatever. So all of the transmission we've had in Hawaii, none of it's related to tourism, of course. All of it's from either originating in a small number of travelers, local travelers who have come back to Hawaii, but then to the larger extent in the second wave this summer from community spread, plain old community spread, people just not paying attention to the protocols. And so you want protocols for the arriving passenger that preempt introduction, reintroduction, and that allow or mitigation in the event somebody does arrive and then presents either symptomatically or otherwise, because you can be asymptomatic, evidence of, you know, reinfection risk. It took a while for the state to come up with those management protocols, and it sounds like now they're, you know, they've got it a little more organized. So we'll see. It'll be a big experiment. It hasn't worked well elsewhere. So that's, you know, that's a risk. The solution to the economic problem is the solution to the epidemiological problem. Solve the epidemiological problem and you solve the economic problem. So the question will be, can the protocols that have been adopted enable restoration of Hawaii's principal export without reintroduction of risk exposure of a magnitude that can't be managed? And as I say, it remains to be seen. You know, personally, I would have preferred much more rigorous protocols. Like, for example, I don't understand why we're not tracking people's smartphones. Ask me if I care about their privacy, because Google's already tracking them. Facebook is tracking them. Nobody seems to care about that. Why should the Attorney General? But that seems to be the number one issue among politicians' minds, or lawyers at any rate. And so we're not going to do that, which has obviously worked in East Asia. but we're going to do some more testing and maybe even testing upon arrival, which makes way more sense than testing prior to departure. And then some version of contact tracing, not using technology, which is sort of like how the dumb people do it. And then some version of, you know, isolation, sort of managed environments, like if not full resort bubbles, but, you know, something in that framework that seeks to diminish mobility and therefore transmission in the event somebody arrives that has been infected. I mean, me, I'd put everything to work. And in particular, I'd put smartphone and geo-tracking technology to work.
We did talk with General Hara, and he did indicate that, yeah, that second test is something that they are working on. You know, they'll roll out what they have, and they'll tweak it along the way.
We're going to learn as we go. Things like rapid testing and, you know, the spit-in-a-cup test or whatever, these alternative but less accurate but shorter turnaround testing formats will become available at lower costs and make it easier to engage more actively, more aggressively in the first step, which is screening through testing. So that's definitely a good sign. And I'm glad to hear they're embracing it.
We're at a point where we have not gotten another shot in the arm with federal funds.
Yeah.
We've got this election coming up. So lots of things that could affect our economy in a big way. You know, we're starting to see the layoffs, the airlines, Disney.
Yeah, you know, there have been a lot of people with global hotel brands who have been on furlough. They've been told that their jobs would be waiting for them after 6 months or whatever. And now that we've reached the six-month mark, a lot of these companies are having to make hard decisions in the absence of any further indication of support for either for preserving employment or helping with commercial rent or whatever the problem is. The point of the CARES Act and the related, you know, there were a series of interventions in the spring, federal fiscal policy interventions, was understanding that the driver, that the underlying risk factor is completely exogenous. Nobody made a mistake making bad residential loans, mortgage loans, or whatever, putting the financial system at risk. In this case, it literally came out of the blue or from bats or somewhere. The fact that it's exogenous risk, but nonetheless systemic in the sense that the entire population and therefore the entire economy is exposed, is at risk, then a collective response, you know, from we the people, from the government, is warranted. And going into debt to do it makes just as much sense under the current circumstances as has been the case in the past, when either because of economic depression from other origins, as in the 1930s, or because of World War in the 1940s, you know, we mobilized as a society. There is an understanding that depending on how things worked out, right, contingent on how things looked after 6 months, a similar response might need to be mobilized. And if you ask the economists at any time over the last several months now, certainly in July and August, for which I have survey data, economists were almost uniformly, I mean, large proportions, three quarters, 75% to 80% of economists not only said that an additional federal fiscal stimulus was necessary, but that the range for such an intervention was broadly from $1 to $3 trillion, and, you know, centered closer to $2 trillion than the $1 trillion. So I don't know what these clowns have been waiting for, because if you were to have asked an economist back in July and August, they would have told you that. And our professional associations did survey us, and that's what we all, you know, told the survey takers. We had a recovery emerging in the late spring, early summer, and then, you know, for whatever reason, you know, because people are idiots, we had second waves, and now we had second wave across the Sun Belt, and then people on Oahu, people in Honolulu were like, ha, look at those guys, look at those clowns in Arizona and Florida and Southern California. And then guess what? We had our second wave over here on Oahu. And then now a bunch of other clowns are having their second wave, right? They just had to ride their Harley Davidson to Sturgis, South Dakota. And so now, north of the Dakotas right now are the most toxic places in America. And I think North Dakota today is worse than New York in March, and worse than as bad as Arizona and Florida in July. So we have these rolling regional waves, and the problem for us in terms of the question, what's the nature of the recovery? Well, in the first place, it aborted in the third quarter, at least partially. And the risk now as we go into the fourth quarter is that right at the moment when we have an impetus for additional economic recovery from the reopening of tourism, just presuming that we actually manage it, the challenge is that we could have an additional wave of coronavirus introduction and, COVID-19 morbidity that further sets back the recovery trajectory.
That was part of a conversation with Paul Brubaker of TZ Economics that we had yesterday afternoon. He was giving us his take on our shaky economy as we head into the fourth quarter of 2020.